Welcome. Thank you very much for coming to this session on MVC3 and Razor. Just like to get a show of hands. Well, firstly, my name is Daniel, and I work for Objectify and Xamarin. What I'm going to take you through today is basically from knowing nothing to being able to implement MVC3 Razor within your organization. The sample that I show you at the end, I've implemented over 20 times, works really, really well, and basically, it's all about productivity. I'm sure there's, like every pattern and usage pattern, MVC3 is fantastic at certain things. And I'm sure you'll find today that you'll go home and be able to implement some of these things yourself. I haven't put it up on my site yet, disposablearchitect.com, but I'm going to put all my code samples up there so you'll be able to use them straight away. Just like to get a bit of a show of hands of who's actually used MVC3 Razor. All right, it's about 20 or 30%. Fantastic. Are you excited by MVC3 Razor?
Yes.
All right. Wasn't hugely enthusiastic. Hopefully by then today you are. Okay. So just a bit of an overview. MVC3, what do I get standard? So I'm just going to take you through basically once you've installed MVC3 Razor, what can you do with it? Then what else should I use? Because like all good frameworks, lots of different plugins and other type of gadgets actually help with your productivity. And that's what we're all about as developers. Telerik MVC3 Control Toolkit. It's my favorite control toolkit, and I use that today in my app as a free version if you want to just learn and do an open source project. Otherwise, there's a license required. And I'm just going to take you through basically from plain old C# object to the DB using code first, T4 templates, repository patterns, and some WCF or ASMX services, a Telerik grid, and then ability to edit. So I'm basically going to construct for you on stage two separate apps. One is a standard and one is using a nicer interface. And that's what the business app's about. So that's all I've got from a PowerPoint perspective. We're going to go straight into code and setup. Okay, so to get started with MVC3, ASP.NET MVC3 with Razor, the easiest way is after you've installed Visual Studio 2010, obviously there's a free version or the professional version, is the Microsoft Web Platform Installer 3. It's a fantastic utility. It doesn't just do what I'm talking about today, but I thought I would just show everybody the URL or the page. And I'm also going to just show you, this is essentially what you get. So on your Windows 7 machine, you run this platform installer, and then the first option is actually ASP.NET MVC3 installer. Now this basically includes the Razor 3 view engine, some templates for Visual Studio, and all the code that goes behind actually executing the MVC pattern. Alrighty. So Visual Studio, I'm just gonna basically, as I mentioned, in the bio, I mentioned that it's a code crazy. Pretty much, I'm just gonna go flat out. There's lots of different concepts that I'm gonna be trying to communicate. So all of this session's obviously being recorded and it'll be uploaded. So if you do miss something, don't worry, you'll be able to go back and watch it. So after installing the web platform installer, I just select a new project. And one of the options is ASP.NET MVC3 web application. Couple of different types. The one I'm just going to go for is an intranet application. Basically, I'm pitching this as something that you would use inside your business, a line of business app. I have here the view engine. So the ASPX was the MVC2 and the first iteration of MVC3 view engine. Razor is the new one that we're looking at today. It's a real step up. I think you'll see if you're familiar with the older tag scenario. It's basically just a more fluent language. The semantic is a lot cleaner, and it requires less essential code. You can also create a unit test project, and we're also specifying HTML5 semantic. Okay, so what the project has basically done is on the right-hand side in the Solution Explorer, you can see it's added a whole heap of files So by default, it includes jQuery and the Entity Framework. A little bit of an overview of what you might want to do to set this up in a production scenario. But what I'm going to do for you today is I'm going to create a very small line of business scenario, so complaints handling. And so the first thing that I want to do is actually create a new folder to put my entities into. Oops. And then I'm going to create some class files called complaint. Instead of typing out this full object, I'm just going to use code snippets. Who here uses code snippets in their development? All right, not enough of you. Look, code snippets are fantastic. Basically, anytime you find something that required a little bit of research, it's a fantastic idea just to add them into your code snippets. So I use Dropbox for my synchronization, but you could use SkyDrive, whatever, what have you. I'll just quickly reference that. Essentially, you can add any folder you like, and so when you move from machine to machine, all your code snippets come along with you. All right, so basically I've just got a fairly simple class, complaints class and a comments class, audit trail and a complaint type. Pretty straightforward. But I'm not actually going to go into too much detail at the moment about that. I'm just going to sort of step through and go back and reference that. But essentially, I'm creating my database structure. So I'm going to use Entity Framework code first. But to do that, I also need, not only do I need the POCO files, I also need my database context or my complaint context. Once again, I'm just going to insert my code snippets. Okay, so one of the tools that I use a lot is ReSharper. Fantastic tool for automatic IntelliSense and what have you. So as you'll notice, I've just imported or pasted in some code, and ReSharper is going to help me validate this. So this is the Entity Framework context class. It's also then going to reference my my entities themselves. So look, that's pretty much it for me to set up my database structure. Obviously, there's some things missing. I can put in referential relationships and required fields and what have you, but for the sample today, I'm just going to basically show you the bare minimum. Has anyone in the room actually used Entity Framework's code first in a production scenario? A couple of hands went up. Yep. Cool. It's probably about 10% of you. It's another really interesting technology. I suppose it allows you to extremely quickly prototype without having to go into Enterprise Manager or create a database. And Entity Framework itself is obviously the preferred solution when it comes to your ORM layer with your Microsoft .NET framework. What I need to do now is create some sample data. So I'm going to go into my home controller. And I've got some sample data. I'm just going to call this on my index. Okay, something with MVC3, it doesn't have a default document. The idea, like you do in ASP.NET, where you can right-click and say set as default document, and you can also select your browser, doesn't actually allow for that. And so I've actually installed an extension called World of Visual Studio Browser Selection. So basically, you can go into Tools, you can go into Extension Manager, and you can add all of your own extensions. So this one here, WOVS Browser Extensions, just really handy. It allows me to select IE as my default browser for debugging and what have you. I have a few other extensions as well. So NuGet, it's a fairly popular tool these days. It basically allows you to bring down the most current release of open source or paid for source libraries, which I'll do later on. And as I mentioned at the start, the Telerik MVC extensions. So by clicking up here, I can select the different browser. And as I mentioned, I want IE to be my default browser. So now when I run this project for the first time, it's essentially creating my database on the fly. It's putting in my sample data. And I have pretty much not a very pretty website, but essentially, as you can see, on the right-hand side, it's got Windows authentication built in, so I don't have to actually create my own authorization and authentication mechanisms. And it's also just got an about page and a home template. But we want to do more than that. So I'm just going to turn off my sample data. Now, the power of MVC3 is its scaffolding and its templating. So basically what I can do is, from within Visual Studio, I can now create a grid, essentially, that will allow me to edit and insert new data based on that database structure. Before I do that, I'm just going to switch over to SQL Enterprise Manager. It's probably something that you're more familiar with, and explain what the code first has essentially done. So our application was called MVC Application 3, and I created the complaints context. What it's done is it's created the four entities as tables, and it's populated them with data. It's also got an EDM metadata file or table. Essentially what that does is tracks changes. So with code first, what I can essentially do is create my database objects directly off my POCOs. I don't need to do a link to SQL or anything like that and create all of this extra code. Essentially those classes form my database structure. Now I can add to them different bits of metadata, which I'll do a little bit later, which impact my database. And the idea is that EDM file, or table, sorry, tracks the database versioning. And so if I make changes in my POCO objects, in my classes, then the database is going to let me know, and I can seed that with new data and essentially override the changes in the previous version. So I'm just going to talk a little bit now about the structure of MVC. So Model View Controller, the name's a bit of a giveaway. The controller is basically the object that gets executed every time you're accessing a page. It's the thing that brings together all your data and creates a model that is then displayed in your view. And so unlike ASP.NET, where essentially you create a page and you have a code behind generally, and you tie things together from your code behind, MVC3 is completely separate. Basically, each of your layers can be worked on independently, and so it provides a really good opportunity for your designers to be essentially working in the views, and your developers and integrators to be working on your models and your controllers. So I'm just going to have a quick look first at the view, the standard view, I should say. There's also a naming convention. So basically, when I type in the URL, there's a routing engine that looks at every forward slash and reverse engineers that. Now, I'm not going to go into detail. I believe there was another talk where this was explored at length. But basically, in your global.aspx.cs, we've got a default route. And essentially what we're saying is the controller /action/ID is how I'm mapping to my controller, my view, and then my ID for my specific object, my database record or what have you. You can do some fantastic things with routing, but as I said, I won't go into that today. Now, with the new MVC3 Razor engine, the view engine, you no longer have to specify your template. And so if you think of the old ASP.NET approach to MVC3, sorry, the ASP syntax, you essentially had to explicitly specify which template you wanted to use. So I'm going to have a look now at how this is achieved. So under your views and then underscore view start, essentially this file is executed every time a page is loaded. And so what I'm specifying is the layout file. I'm just going to have a quick look at that. So I've got views, shared, layout. Now if you look at the syntax, there's no square brackets, percent, which you're probably familiar with in ASP.NET. The new Razor view engine uses the at symbol, and then essentially from there, you can put your code inside the HTML. So it's just a lot neater. If you look at that code and compare it to ASP.NET, which has lots of different tags, I think you'll find this is a lot more readable and easier to remember how to actually write code for. But what I actually want to do is, I don't want to just have the default, I want to look at my grid or my data, which I created in my first database. So I can go up to the controller directory, and you'll notice in the left-hand side, there's the normal menus that you get, but there's also a new menu, controller. When I click on this, basically what this is going to do is, this is using the scaffolding, and essentially it's going to look at my controller, sorry, at my entities and also my database context, and it's going to build me up a base grid with edit, delete, and insert. So, complaint controller. The way that MVC3 actually correlates your views and your controllers and what have you is through naming conventions. So basically, your view name or view directory will be the same as the first part of your complaint controller. So this is going to create a directory for my views called complaint. You have the option of using different frameworks to actually hook this up. So basically what I'm saying is that I would like my controller and my views to have a read-write actions with the views using Entity Framework. Now, using the Extension Manager, you can download a whole lot of different types. There's a link to SQL, there's Hibernate and what have you, all different types of ORM templates available. I then select my model class, which happens to be the complaint, and my data context, which is my complaint context. I can then choose the view. One of the great things about MVC3 with Razor is that you can actually mix and match your views. So if you have source code written in ASPX or your views, they're still applicable. They will still run side by side, similar to you can have VB and C# code run in the same project. And so that basically means you can future-proof, or sorry, you can uplift your existing code a little bit at a time without having to do a full project upgrade. Under your advanced options, I can specify a different master page, and that's similar to the ASP.NET master page scenario. What that will do is, unlike the page I showed you originally where I was using the default, it will actually explicitly point to a different master page. So when I add that to the project, it's created some new files, a complaint controller. So I'm just quickly going to step through this. My complaint context, which is basically it's referring to as my database. So Entity Framework, there isn't really any code in a code first scenario that you have to maintain or manage. It's essentially create your POCOs as you saw, instantiate your context, and from now on I pretty much just deal with this complaint context directly. For each page or each view, you've got a view result. So index, details, create, a create with parameters, and then an edit, and then also be a delete. All of these are created for you. And that's one of the advantages of MVC3 with Razor is that you have to write very little code yourself. Once you become familiar with the conventions and the different tools that you can utilize, you can actually get up and running really, really quickly and start prototyping and building business apps. So I'm not going to go through each of these in great detail, but essentially, when the view executes, the controller is called, and it returns something back to the view, which it can then interpret. So in this case, I'm instantiating my complaint context. I've got a list of complaints, and I want to actually return a list of those complaints. What that means is that I'll get a long, long list. So I'm now going to show you the directory which was created under the views, which is complaint. If you remember the naming convention, as I said before, so complaint views is tied automatically through the routing engine to complaint controller, and index is the one that I'm interested in. Okay, so basically what it's done is it's interpreted each of my properties on my class, and it's created a table layout for me. And then what it's done is it's essentially got a for each loop, which my model, as you saw in the previous controller, is what was returned, which was an enumerable list. And so what's going to happen is at execution time, it's essentially going to iterate through and populate each of these values. The syntax allows for, essentially, you don't have to put in text boxes and what have you like you would with ASP.NET. All of the binding, I'm not sure if it's a common term, but there's, I think it was Scott Guthrie or Scott Hanselman, used the term left-hand, right-hand, right-hand, left-hand code. And the idea behind that is that when you're in an ASP.NET project, you're often doing textbox.text equals object.value, and then on save, it's object.value equals textbox.text. So you've got this boilerplate code because it doesn't actually support binding by default. What MVC3 allows for is the idea of two-way binding. So you don't actually have to create your objects manually and then have to bind them up on different command clicks. It basically looks after all of that for you. So you're reducing the amount of code significantly. So with the index, like I said, that's going to just bring back a list. If I look at the edit, essentially it's done the same thing and it's created a label for, but then it's got an edit for. Now what edit for does is it basically says, well, you want to edit this data type. And so this is where we can actually have a look at, not in this project, in the next project I'll show you that. Basically you can have templates for different types of editing controls. So if you have a drop-down list, you can essentially template the drop-down list and it'll automatically populate that for you. So I'm just going to run this for you. And then I'm going to go to the complaint controller. So as you saw, I just typed in complaint. That directory didn't exist. The routing engine picked up that term and essentially matched that with the controller and the view. And so now what I have is a really, really long list, 500 odd, of all of my sample data. I can click edit, and as you can see, I've got these different text boxes and what have you. So with pretty much zero effort, or very little effort, I'm able to create a database, a web-based application that uses Windows authentication, and essentially I'm able to now edit and insert those records. But that's sort of pretty simplistic and by itself probably doesn't have a lot of value, but I'm just using this as an example to show you some of the mechanisms that are running underneath. Now there's actually a couple of alternatives when it comes to viewing data through your models. So I'm just going to have a look at the details view. There's still actually hard code or a fair amount of code in this view. My preference would be to actually use dynamic model rendering so that I don't actually have to create this code. Because if I change my class, I either have to recreate the controller and the view or go in and modify this. And the less code you have, the less opportunity for risks, for risk and bugs and what have you. So I'm actually going to just delete all of this code here. And using the at symbol, which brings up my MVC commands, and then HTML, I can now do display for model. Now what this is going to do is this is going to read my model at runtime and essentially build the layout as you saw it before without any of that other code. Now, what that means is, I'll firstly explain how is the model interpreted. So up on line one, I'm using the at symbol model, and I'm referencing my complaint class. And so now when I'm down here, I can type model dot, and there's all my properties that were part of my original class. But I'm not going to specify them individually. As I said, I'm looking for the least amount of code to achieve the same result. So if I save that file and then run that, now when I go to the details, I have a list of the details, basically automatically generated. But you'll see something there that's really not what you want. You don't want to see complaint ID as part of your, well, not Some people may, but in this scenario, that's something that I don't want to do. So I'm going to show you now how that, by actually modifying the metadata or the annotations on the class, impacts on the rendering in the MVC view engine. So if I go to my complaints entity, all I need to do is type in scaffolding, scaffolding column equals true. ReSharper wants to automatically associate that with bringing the using statement. Now when I run that, it's essentially saying ignore this column. Scaffolding was false, sorry. Doesn't matter how many times you practice, you still get things wrong. So that's now been removed. So basically what I've shown you is, without having to go into a database, I've created the database, I've created some sample data. With very little code, I can start displaying, edit, delete data on your screen. But this is not something that I imagine most people would deploy into their production environment. So I'm now going to take you through the same scenario, but using more, better controls, essentially, and a more realistic scenario, or a more full scenario. So this time, I'm going to actually be using the Telerik ASP.NET MVC controls. So basically, this is a control toolkit. There's plenty of open source ones available. This is just the one that I use. I find that it works really well. I've been using it for about 6 or 7 years. So same as before, I create my Visual Studio package. Oh, sorry, I start up Visual Studio. New project, and this time I'm actually going to choose the Telerik MVC3 web application. I can create a test project if I like, I'm not going to do that for this demo. Basically, there's different global resources, so the Telerik project has themes and what have you, jQuery, all those type of things built in. I can choose my theme. Office 2010 Silver. And so now that's going to go away and create that project. That takes a little bit of time. Unlike the standard project template that comes with MVC3 Razor, this enables me to essentially have different templates, different themes and what have you, and also the grids, the drop-downs, and all those things that come with it are a lot more application looking, a lot more modern. Okay, so it's created a similar structure as before. This time though, under the views, there's an editor templates area. So basically what this area is for is, for example, when I want to edit an integer, I can actually use the Telerik integer text box. So by default, that won't allow me to put letters, for example, into that field. It will automatically mandate that I use numerics. You can create your own templates, and I'll take you through that in a moment. But it's a very powerful feature of MVC3, is the ability to essentially template directly to your model. So you're not having to create, once again, a select box or something inside your ASP.NET code. You essentially say, this is a select type of using the UI hint, and it will automatically bring the correct template in for you. So you can actually perform changes right across your code extremely quickly. So when I run this project, you can see it's pretty much exactly the same. just slightly different. Instead of the blue menu bar, it's actually using the silver template or the silver theme. Okay, so I'm just going to quickly step through and mimic a little bit of what I did before, which is the to these. I'm going to create my class once again. And this time I'm going to do something a little bit different, and that is that I'm actually going to separate my classes into separate files. So something that ReSharp is fantastic at is basically giving you hints about what you should do. So when I click on the comment class, ReSharp is basically saying, move this to another file. And that's really important for what I'm going to do next. Obviously, in the last demo, I was just going for speed. This time, I'm actually going to move these files. And so as quick as that, I'm essentially moving each class into its own folder, and I've got now my four separate entities, which will map directly to my database as per the previous example. Also going to create my context again. This time though, because I've installed a different or set up a different project, I don't actually have the entity framework. So it can't resolve the DB context. And this is where NuGet becomes really, really useful. So I've got a package manager console down the bottom. I can either do this through a GUI or I can do it down here. Essentially what I type is install, I press tab, comes up with package, and then I type entity, or I'll even just type the start and I'll press tab. It's now checking the NuGet server for a list of all packages that it has access to. As you can see, we've got entity framework, patterns, extensions. I encourage you to check them out. Some of them have got some fantastic samples in there. Really different ways of thinking about development. All we're doing today, though, is entity framework. I select that, I press enter. Without doing very little, we're doing very little, I now have a reference to the entity framework in my solution. You can use NuGet for jQuery, basically entity framework, lots of different packages out there. It's growing all the time. Can I get a show of hands of who's actually used NuGet? Sweet. Yep. Well, if you haven't, really get onto it because it makes your life so much easier. You're no longer having to store your local copies of those packages yourself. You pretty much, every time you create a new project, NuGet it up. It's essentially just some PowerShell scripts that know how to bring those packages down for you. Now when I click on the DB context, it can resolve the using statement automatically for me. Okay. So something that's a little bit different with this one is that I'm going to start using T4 templates. Who in the room is familiar with T4 templates? All right, not bad, about 20 or 30%. Okay, so what a T4 template is basically it gives you the ability within Visual Studio to execute code from the design time. You can create a iterative loop that essentially loops through your class objects and then produces code for you. And the idea is that you create these templates and you can reuse them across packages. Now, I've taken it a step further because I don't want to sit on stage and write a whole heap of templates. I've just created a little tool just in WPF that allows me to open my class or import my class and then annotate that class with different properties that I'm interested in. So I'm just going to open my class file. Complaint. Oh, wow. Maybe not. Might help if I save the file. Okay, so what it's done is it's inferred each of the properties, and essentially now what I can do is set my annotations. So in the previous example, I showed you how I could do a scaffolding column. I'm always forgetting these things, so I wrote this tool so that basically I can just use this GUID GUI, and essentially it will annotate those objects for me. So I'm just going to go through and set some things. For example, required on name, address, city, and postcode. Now the reason for that is that I want to show you the jQuery validation that's automatically built in as well. I've got a column that I don't want to map. Not mapped essentially means we're not going to be creating a database column for this field. And so you can have your POCO objects that have subsets that are persistent in the database, but other fields aren't. And that's using the not mapped annotation. I'm also going to specify the dropdown, data type and the lookup table. I'm going to do that for this one as well. We can also do show in view and show in edit. So basically what we're able to achieve is we can say that on the view screen, which we showed at the start, we only want these columns. On the edit screen, we want all of them. So I'm not going to show this one in view, and I'm not going to show this one in edit. I've also added a custom annotation, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But basically, you can create custom attributes that implement business logic if you like. So in this case, I've actually got tabs that I'm using in my edit control, and I'm basically specifying from here which tab the items show up in. So I'm just going to put personal details. For these three, or four, I should say. Okay, so I think that's pretty much it. Specified my namespace, my class name, and my DB context. Now I'm going to create the class template. When I go back to Visual Studio, it identifies I've made a change to it externally, and so now I'm going to reload the project. So what we have now is a complaint.tt file. So it's deleted the complaint.cs and it's created a template. Underneath that is the complaint.cs file. When I load up the TT file, basically I don't get what you saw before, which was the C# code. I actually get the T4 templating language, which happens to also implement C#. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but it's a really, really useful feature. I encourage you to look into it. Essentially, what you do is you specify your output type. It uses the naming convention, so it's going to call it complaint because that's the name of my T4 file. And then I can set up some variables. And then what it does when I save this file is you can see here I've got a for loop. I iterate through and I can write lines. So essentially, I'm writing C# code from this T4 template. If I try and go to that CS file, it doesn't exist at this stage. But if I press save, it has now created for me my CS file. I just need to essentially validate the references. And now I have a fully annotated CS file. Now I know that's nowhere near as pretty as the previous file. Looks a little bit messy. Some of these annotations don't need to be here. We can use interfaces and what have you if we like to abstract that out further, but for the proof of this for this demo today, I just wanted to show you essentially the main annotations that come with MVC. So required is obviously one. Display name is very important, especially where you've got something like this. So complaint lodged being one word as far as my property is concerned, I want to have a space there so I can actually have a different display name. Additional metadata, as I said, basically I can query that additional metadata in the Razor View engine and I can get it to respond. So I might have in there assertions about roles that are required to make changes, things like that. Also the data type dropdown. As I mentioned before, basically if I've got an integer or what have you, I can specify that I want an integer-based template that only allows for integers and not textual input. And all of these things that I'm showing you, by themselves, they're not that powerful, but when you bring them all together, basically, you're not having to worry about creating your own validation framework. It's using jQuery on the client, and also on the server side, it's using the built-in ASP.NET validation framework. You're not having to do your authentication. You're not having to worry about your ORM layers and that sort of thing. Very, very quickly, you can create your app, which is very, very, very easy to modify moving forward. Okay. So I've created my complaints entity, or my complaint entity, but I want to do a little bit more than that, obviously, and I want to implement a good design principle, so I'm actually going to create a repository template. So when I click on this button, I now go in here, and under my model, I now have another TT file, complaint repository. Once again, basically, T4 template, iterating through, and essentially what this is doing is it's creating me an interface, and then it's creating me an implementation of that. Now, this template could have mocking, stubbing, whatever you want built into it for your automated unit testing and what have you. But the great thing is that whenever I make a change now to my class, I can just rerun this T4 template, and it will recreate my CS file for me. And so I'm not having to think about, from a designer's perspective or a developer's perspective, what are the impacts going to be when I make a change to my entities, because my database will let me know that I've made a change. My repository will automatically be updated, and the other pieces, which I'll show you in a minute, will also be updated. And so you're reducing, basically, all of that domain knowledge or application knowledge that is required to maintain applications usually. It's pretty simple. It's using the complaint context, as we showed you in the previous example. It's returning an iQueryable of complaint type. Using link, it's obviously fluent, so I can basically from anywhere do .where or .filter or what have you, and that's passed along. I don't need to create my own specific methods that return specific scenarios. I can actually just use the power of link across the entity framework. Insert and update. Now, as I mentioned before about the left-hand, right-hand, right-hand, left-hand code, sometimes when you've got an update statement, like I said, you'll actually have object.value equals new object value. With MVC, I can basically say context.complaints add, and I can add my value, or I can actually just update and set it as a modified state and automatically propagates all those values for me back to the database. So once again, very, very little code from my perspective, but I've got my whole ORM situation set up automatically for me. Now, you could have implemented any sort of pattern that you like here. You don't have to do it this way. But once again, the power of T4 templates means that that's generated dynamically for me based on my class file. So I'm just going to save that. So the next piece is a service template. So I've decided that I want to enable essentially all of my database objects to be referenced via services. So I have a complaint service now. I'm going to do the same thing, essentially save the file. It creates my complaint service. Okay, so this is just using essentially the WCF service type or the web service type. Once again, I won't go into it here, but essentially it's annotating each of the methods with an operational contract, as you can see on line 33 and 42. I don't have a filter on this, so I don't need to use that. Basically, insert, delete, update, and select. It also allows for what's known as the grid state. Basically, I don't want to have to worry about... when I'm retrieving records, I only want to retrieve tenants time, for example. And so what the grid state contains is things like what's my offset, what's my total, all those sort of things that you want to display back to the user. Now, this is coming back as JSON as well. So basically, it's a very, very low footprint, and I'll use Fiddler in a minute and show you just how small the transfer of data is. And the final piece is my grid template. That's under my views, shared, complaints grid. Same thing, another T4 template. And now I have my grid. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the way that MVC instantiates objects, you don't just put square bracket ASP colon and then grid or text box or what have you. You actually use a fluent language. And so using my Razor at symbol, HTML.telerik.grid, and I'm specifying my type, and I just keep on pressing dot and changing the properties. What that allows you to do is to build up essentially your object or your control using code instead of actually using HTML or, ASP.NET markup. Some people don't like it this way, other people do. It's just depending on what your preferences are. But basically, you're not doing code in the same way that, you're able to create a separation between your code and your design. I'm just going to delete this filter. And I've got a little bit of JavaScript in the bottom. Okay, so I'm going to go back to my controller, and I'm going to quickly add back in the sample data so we can see what this looks like comparative to our last example. Now, with Entity Framework, you can actually tell it to seed data automatically. It just takes a little bit more to set up, so I haven't done that in this scenario. I'm just going to run this for the first time, so create my database and populate it with sample data, the same sample data. Okay, don't want to do that twice. All right, now I haven't actually created a new folder like last time called complaints. If you remember, when I created the controller, it automatically created the views and it created all those files for me. I'm not going to do that this time. What I'm going to do is use the partial ability of MVC View Engine. So at symbol HTML.partial. And then as I start typing, the IntelliSense brings back, well, I've got a complaint red grid, which is what I created with my template before. No need to put a colon or anything after that. Basically, what this means is that I can include this anywhere in any project. And using partial is very, very powerful when you've actually got different templates and what have you. You can refer to different partial areas. For them to show up, though, they need to be in your shared directory under views. Okay. So now what will happen is when I actually load up the About page, it will actually render the partial red grid, which I'll now show you. This is what happens with MVC3. Because there's no default document, essentially whatever page you're on, it will try and load, but that doesn't actually exist. So I'll just go back to the root. You can set your default to be the root if you like. Okay, so this time, instead of having this massive, massive grid of 500 records, I've now got a fairly nice looking grid that is showing me all of my objects. And I can page. And if you look just how quick it is, obviously it's running local, but this is where I just want to show you. Who's familiar with Fiddler? Yeah, cool, fair amount of you. For those of you who aren't, basically it's just a tool that you can run and it will actually analyze all of your web traffic. And it's a really good way for looking at whether you've got bulky data transferring from your client back to your server. So it's really good for performance reasons. Essentially, you just start it up. I can now click on any of these pagings, and it's created the request. I can now look at my JSON, and not only is the request quite small, it's also only showing the 10 objects, and that was that grid state. So basically, that's what I'm transferring down the wire as opposed to a whole HTML grid, which would probably be 4 or 5 times the size of that. So not only are we putting together code really quickly, it's also conforming to some pretty good design principles and small bandwidth. Fiddler's a free download. I encourage you, if you haven't already started using it, to start using it. It's fantastic. Okay, so what I can also do is I can click on my edit command. And I forgot to do something. Fantastic. All right. So basically, my drop-down list needs a list of values. So what I need to do is, in my service file, not my service, sorry, in my RadGrid file, I've just got a commented area here that I need to copy across to my controller. Something that MVC3 also provides you is the idea of a view bag. So you've got view data, which I'm using here. So I'm creating a view data array called complaint type ID select, and I'm populating it with some values. But I can also go view bag and create a dynamic object. And so I don't actually have to specify that at I don't have to specify that anywhere else. So I can just do .foo equals ABC. That's now referenceable from within my view. Basically, view data and view bag are exactly the same, except that, as you can see with view data, I've had to specify my square brackets and the name of the object. A view bag basically is like almost type safe. Doesn't actually check the validation of it, but I'm actually just specifying the object. So that's really handy for things like your title of your view and what have you. So now when I go back and run that up again, okay, so I have a nice looking edit grid with tabs. And so unlike the other scenario that looked really dodgy, I'm starting to look more and more like something that your business users would actually accept. With my dropdown, as I mentioned before, pre-populated with the values. And there's also this audit trails and comments thing, which I'll show you in a second. Just quickly to show you the JScript validation, if I create or attempt to create a new one on the personal details, it's automatically implemented my validation because I specified them as required. And so unlike ASP.NET, where you will copy across a field validator and essentially tie that to your text box, which basically creates a potential for an out of sync between your class object and your interface, this dynamically interprets that for you. And so you don't actually have to write any of that custom code yourself. Yeah, some nice animations. Basically, jQuery includes the J animation framework as well. And so I guess what I'm trying to show you is that pretty quickly, by using these templates and these different techniques, we haven't written a lot of code, but it's starting to look like something that someone in your business might use, which is often a list of something filtered for you and then properties. So now I'm going to actually add the ability that when you click on this, it's going to error for me, but I'll show you some more details. So the idea here is that we're now going to implement a subgrid of each one of these. So I'm going to show you the comments grid to tie this whole application together. Okay. So I'm going to use my tool again on the comments file instead. I'm just going to rush through this so that starting to run out of time. Okay, so what it's done is it's basically created my comments TT file again. I'm just going to quickly save that. My model. Something else actually I forgot before, with the services themselves, it also automatically imports your systems.service model data and your web config, just so that those services can be referenced. Excellent. So the difference here is the idea of a filter. So because the comments are essentially only because the comments are tied to specific complaint records, I've also added the ability to read the filter from the grid. And so what that means is I don't actually have to create any hard relationships between those things. It basically, once the view and the controller combine, the grid then sends back the relationship information for me when it tries to insert or update. That'll become apparent in a minute. And then my comment rad grid. So you can imagine once you've got a library of these templates, these T4 templates, nearly every common thing that you do essentially can be extracted this way. And so if you're growing, I guess, a set of bespoke applications in your organization, as I said, I've implemented around 20 of these in different teams, you find that really your development becomes around perfecting the T4 templates and essentially just building these apps. And you know, we've only had an hour here today, but as you can see, you can bring some stuff together pretty powerfully. Imagine what you could do in a couple of days if you're actually polishing these files. Okay, so I'm just going to turn off some of the different properties. Doesn't need to be resizable or reorderable, scrollable or anything like that. Essentially, it just needs to be filterable. Something that I actually forgot to mention before, the Telerik grid allows you to bind to your data source in different fashions. My preference is to use the web services binding. And as you can see here, I'm specifying the service method to call. Just provides a really nice separation of concerns so that somebody can be working on your services layer completely independently. And something else I'd point out, obviously I've put everything into one project, but more than likely you would move your entity framework stuff into a different class library. Your services would probably be in a different library as well. I don't need any of this stuff down here. Okay. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to create under the views. In the past, or in the last demo, I created my controller first, and it read my controller and created a view for me. This time, I'm just going to create a quick view that's independent of a controller. Once again, I'm going to choose Razor. I'm going to call it Details and create as a partial page. Basically, when it's a partial page, it's not going to have a master page. It's just going to be completely independent, a bit like a user control in ASP.NET. Okay. So I'm just going to insert another snippet. So I'm specifying the layout equals null. I'm referencing my entities, and I've got a partial comment rad grid just inside a field set. No code behind. Basically, it's now going to look for my controller method called details. So I need to go up to my home controller and create that. So I'll just copy this, rename that to be details. And I need to return a view. You can just return a blank view, doesn't need to have anything in it, essentially, but the controller does need to exist, or the method on the controller, the action result. Using that naming convention, as I said, it will bring those two things together at runtime. So now when I run this up, and I click on the specific record, apart from my grid not being big enough, it's brought in my comments records that are associated with that. And so you can imagine, and I can edit and delete and what have you, filter. I could also bring in my audit trail, whatever else I want to bring in there, workflow and what have you. All right. Well, that's pretty much it. We're right on time. It's 12:29. If you've got any questions, we've got, I think, 15 minutes to basically answer any of your questions. Thanks very much for attending. Hope you had a great tech ed. And, yeah, have a good afternoon.